This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Good morning, kia ora, and meri kirehe meti, and welcome to Free Left Turn, a left-wing perspective, here on 89.0 Free FM.
Good morning.
Top of the morning.
Yes.
How was everyone's Christmas?
Oh, nice and quiet, the way I like it.
Yeah, mine was quiet.
Yeah, I sort of impersonated a python during the course of the 2 days after eating.
Okay, yeah.
Just slithering
around, dozing off. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
God,
was quiet.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was pleasant. But I'd say it was good to caught up with a few friends and caught up earlier with the family, which was good, worked for everyone, and spent the day with some friends and one of my children and partner, and no, it was good. And I was home on the couch asleep by 3 o'clock. My brother rang me from to wish him Merry Christmas, and that was at 5:30. And that was when I woke up. So, well, I didn't need much tea on Christmas evening.
The eating thing, eh?
And how was yours?
Quiet. We initially were just going to be the three of us. We just wanted a quiet sort of Christmas day. Margaret got a visit from a brother, and because his son had gone through this cancer process, and he kind of had a relapse, which we didn't know about until we were told. Until Margaret was told that particular day of the visit, and he was looking, and Margaret's nephew was looking forward to Christmas, so it was decided that we'd
that'd be nice.
Go over there, because you just don't know where these things.
And it was in Hamilton, so you know, travel.
I was thankful for small mercies. I've phoned my brother up in Croatia, and they've been laid low by the rampaging flu that's going through Europe at the moment.
So they weren't doing a lot of Christmas celebrations.
They weren't doing any Christmas. Just hunkered down and weathered the storm, so to speak.
Okay.
Doesn't sound nice. So
no, it's pretty. It's ripping through places, eh?
Yeah.
So it'll be coming our way soon.
Yes. Anyway, okay, so that's your Christmas done for another year. Town's quite busy. Mick and I came through, and there's still people around and all that. So whether they'll, I think I've read somewhere that more move out after Christmas before New Year's. You know, and they move the young ones if they didn't go, if they haven't already gone to the beach house, or the lake house, or camping, then others will go out just for the New Year's Eve sort of thing beforehand. So, but the weather's not much chop. Whether you've got a big house or a little house, it's just average, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty
overcast.
It's fine. But I've been enjoying my tomatoes for Christmas. Anyone who wants to hear my story, I've been boring them with it.
The socialist fruit. Not much. I haven't really followed the news a hang of a lot during the.
This time of year, it's usually full of Yuletide good stories, you know, sort of.
Families dressed up in the same pajamas or whatever it is.
That sort of thing.
Inane activity.
Yeah, there's always beach photos.
People being asked what their favourite carol is or their favourite.
Yeah.
No, it's usual trite this time of year.
Or favourite politician.
All that sort of thing. Well, they're all at the beach house or the lake house or, you know, wherever, so they're all quite happy, thank you very much.
And being paid, yes.
Yeah.
While they're there, yes.
But it's all, you know, it's a tale of... Chris, as I said before, unfortunately, Christmas is a time of... It exasperates the inequalities of the world. You
want to say it, eh? Christmas is a tale of two cities.
Yeah, absolutely.
Funny you mention that, because I've got an article here says that Christmas food costs lay bare supermarket power. And this is an opinion piece written by Sue Chetwin, who's a chair of the Grocery Action Group and the former chief executive of Consumer New Zealand. And this was written on Wednesday, so Boxing Day, Christmas Eve. A few of us waited in the last year, waiting for fairer prices. That's because so many have left for greener pastures, Australia. But for those who have left, it's a bit like being a partridge perched up on a pear tree waiting for the ultimate gift of Christmas, fair food prices. Daily food costs are cited as one of the reasons for the exodus to Australia. The average supermarket shops for a family of four costs $486 in Aotearoa, but $203 in Australia.
Okay.
It's a marked difference, eh?
Yeah, it seems high. How many for four? If suppose the teenage children wants to get over sort of...
Once you become a teenager, you just become a walking vacuum
mate.
Suck up food like nobody's business.
Yeah.
It just seems the disparity between the two is really marked, and we're paying far more than our Australian counterparts.
Yeah. Well, and I suppose you've got
to... That would impact on people that you work with, Craig, too.
Well, let's face it, if you're pumping gas at a garage, the minimum pay in Australia is higher and all that.
It is the cost of living higher, though, although this would suggest otherwise, wouldn't it?
It would. I think in some cities in Australia, the housing is accommodation and all that's the really issue. But there's other areas where it's just you are better off. And hence, because let's face it, I've known several young people leave earlier this year, and talk to their families, and none of them are saying about coming back. So they've all found work, and they all must be quite happy, thank you.
They're saying, like, it cost us $54 for a 2 kg leg of lamb, but in Australia it's $36.80.
Yeah, and we produce the stuff here.
Mm.
And they were.
World prices are reflected by domestic prices.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be. It should be separated out.
Yeah, but they're too greedy.
It's only going to get worse.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, the duopoly of Foodstuffs and Woolworths. That's the two major outfits that umbrella organ. Between them, share more than 85% of the market.
Yeah, but
which means that prices reflect another year without any meaningful competition.
Yeah, but I think there's also that they won't talk about it, but actually plenty of farmers are driving around in late model cars, and they're all at the beach house once the hay's in, et cetera.
Yeah, but politicians on both sides have talked about fairer prices, but nothing's happened.
But the aim is, it's the bad supermarkets. Well, actually, there's the price, what the cocky gets, is a large component of that. If you're getting...
But if they're buying him, they'd be buying him huge quantities of bulk.
Yeah.
So they're not passing on the savings to our domestic customers. They're just maximising their profits.
But what I'm getting at is, like, I know my son-in-law paid $900 for some yearlings, which are... They've just been weaned,
each.
So you work that, and then you say, wonder why you're paying $90 a kilo for a piece of eye fillet or something like that.
Yeah.
And lamb's the same. If you're paying $200 for a sheep, work out there's only four legs on two shoulders and two legs.
Of course.
What the price is paid for, which affects what's paid for overseas. So we ever get the dregs, that's not exportable.
Mm.
But still paying the same top price.
Well, that's what the issue should be, and should there be emphasis on, okay, just because someone in France is prepared to pay $20 for a block of butter, should we have to pay the same, $10?
Yeah, $10. I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
And as a socialist, to me, that's where governments should go, well, actually, this is what our people are having to pay. It's too much.
They won't go there.
No, they won't go. They'll say we can't subsidise food. But what it does mean is more poor health outcome, because the poor can't afford to eat nice food, basically, or good food.
Yeah. You're right, greed-based economy.
This kind of spills over to homelessness on the rise in the Waikato.
Yeah.
So you talk about all those costs of living.
And emergency housing's down. You know, they're skiting, still skiting about the reduced emergency housing.
There's a couple of hundred Waikato people who haven't got a fixed address to give to their doctor.
Yeah. Jeez, how does the benefit work, Craig, if you haven't got a fixed address?
Yeah, it used to
be able to give the night shelter's address, I believe, and things like that. I don't know if that still applies.
Mm. Yeah, some people will give a postal address of an organisation to save.
Yes, what I mean, because
but if you've got no sort of fixed abode, but some people have gotten around it. Say for example, if you're in a living out of a house bus or a camper or something like that.
Well, and wouldn't I assume that the homeless that we see around the city and that, I assume they're getting a basic benefit from somewhere.
I hope so, because they said at the end of the year, Salvation Army, they had a report earlier this year, there's been like a 300% increase in homelessness in Hamilton in a year.
Yeah.
And those behind the city night shelter spoke of being overwhelmed.
Mm. I wonder what the connection is.
Yeah.
Rents. Like the emergency housing, they've cut back on that or they've made the criteria harder. Mm. So is that the relationship between homes is up, emergency housing is down?
Because they wanted to massage the figures down, didn't they? So they changed the rules.
Yeah.
So they could flick some people off the books to make it look good.
Yeah.
We've solved homelessness. We've reduced it. No, you've reduced it by kicking them out.
Yeah. So where do these people... Then the question comes, where do these people go?
Yeah. And some have got young kids. That's the disturbing thing.
Well, and I think the often people say, they can go to whanau or they can go to families or someone's couch or all that.
It's a lifestyle choice.
Oh, we get that from Mark Mitchell and that one.
But the thing is, the families that they're going to,
a lot of them are struggling themselves.
And
let's face it, some of these people bring in health issues and disabilities and all that. So, you know, it's not just it's not easy quite often.
They miss it on the big D word, dysfunctional.
So
rather sobering, right?
But 300%.
As early as October, 250 people in the Waikato Health District had no fixed abode.
How many?
250.
In the Waikato?
The Waikato area.
But that was October, wasn't it?
The health district area.
Okay.
I think it's going to get worse.
Well, an awful lot of people are staying with relatives or something like that. And I remember when I worked at the courthouse, there was, you know, they'd be offering bail. But the problem was to find someone who would take them in.
Yeah.
And, of course, some of these people had issues, et cetera. And so quite often people who they'd offer for a bail address, they were caught between a rock and a hard place. They knew they were related or closely related even, but the person was going to potentially create issues in their own household.
Also say the seasons has affects these people too, more visible in colder weather.
Yeah, that's true,
And I think the inequality of Christmas must be another big issue. With mental health and everything else. You're told, it's Christmas and all this, and you see people driving past, with apparent wealth and good lifestyles, etc.
And
you're just sitting on your park bench, if they haven't taken the park bench away.
Well, that comes back to your comment before, Tale of Two Cities.
And where that ends, they just talk about the upper end and that's it,
And bugger everything else.
Because
they resurrected over on Facebook the old bottom feeders comment by Luxon.
And I say, for Luxon and the Willises and a lot of people like that, their normal is the beach house. Their normal is the lake house. Their normal is a nice house in town. Mm. Their normal is night. Restaurant meals and nice food. So that's their world. And who do they associate with?
Similar people
on similar sort of, from same demographics, often it's the same race, So they don't they have. They might read about the poor and all that, but do they deal with them in any
no, for them, any it's circumstances? It's an abstract problem, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, they might have to step over them and if they go into a restaurant.
Lucky if they go, oh, that's interesting. There's so many people unemployed or homeless, and then they'll go into something else.
And don't get me wrong, it's not their fault. It's often the lottery of life and everything else. But if they don't have any empathy, and if you hear that, well, they just should have worked harder like I did, that's when I start to, my hackles go up. It's the sort of saying, well, look at me, I've done all right. And they could be like me if they worked hard for their money. That still persists, that sort of
privilege.
They don't appreciate just how lucky they've been.
No.
They might have had good family support when they were growing up.
Inherited wealth,
or they were supported but through going through university, whatever, but had the support.
Rights to education, warm home.
Other people don't have those resources.
And that never had it. Yeah. Like I was saying about city councillors and all that, what happens in the city in the weekends and everything else and facilities is important, because not all people have the joys of going off to the beach house in summer, or going hopping in a good car and being able to go to Auckland for a show or get something. They just spend their time in Hamilton, from mainly because of financial restrictions, because it costs to travel.
Very much so.
I've been a few places in the last little while. I think, oh my goodness, I've spent all my money, and it's my income on travel. So, if you haven't got it, you don't go anywhere.
No, you stay here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Yeah, it's kind of remarkable. There was also something in the transport thing that I had that it caught my eye was the Tihuya still. It's still
up in the air, isn't it?
Yeah, and the kind of people who have quite noisy about opposing it, the Chamber of Commerce's Don Good.
And anyone who's opposed to any sort of subsidy or sponsoring of the common public good, seems to be.
Yeah, that ratepayers group that dominates the regional council.
Yeah.
The Chris Hughes and the Mars of the world.
Yeah,
don't like it.
No.
Get rid of it.
Well, it'd be interesting, because when are they going to decide by?
I think it's coming up this year, isn't it?
Yeah, March, I think.
So whether to continue or not. Because it got to a shaky start, because it started during COVID.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a hiccup as far as trying to get it up and running. But
I think
it was improving. I thought that it was being well patronised. But,
It doesn't run during the holidays, so...
Mm, no, and so. there's what do you call it? Infrastructure work happening now, so which doesn't help. You stop doing things, people can't use it, so then the rats turn around and go, oh, the stats show we only get this much percentage, and yet they haven't been able to run it for a month or two,
that
can happen.
Then it put pressure, if they can, it puts pressures on your roads and da 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 da. But it's all right for the transport industry, trucking industry,
Well, and I say with technology now, we haven't got high speed rail. The real thing, what we should be doing, if we had a bigger vision, a 50-year plan or a 100-year plan, which hello we haven't, but if we had that, we'd go, right, we need high speed rail links between Hamilton, Tauranga, and Auckland,
And possibly Rotorua,
But in the first instance, that's where our population lives. There should be a really good option of not using your car to go to these places. And that would be a big thing. It would cost a lot of money, but it also would give a lot of jobs.
Oh, it would,
And it would pay itself back. But you have to have that 50, 100-year vision. You have to be bipartisan, that sort of thing.
But
it didn't work for the ferries. We had a future vision, and now it's been scaled back to its just,
lack of vision.
Well, and it'll work for a while, and then they'll go, oh, it doesn't really work, and then what will they do?
We should have bought bigger ferries.
And that will happen, but everyone will go, oh, it wasn't us that did that.
Oh, it was you, all right, because you lacked vision like you. And the naysayers for the Tihuya are also lacking vision.
But I still think we should, big vision projects, especially when economies, in the end, you borrow money just to buy a cream cake. That's not good. But if you borrow money to do something that will improve the general good, whether it's a hospital, even a road. You do something that's good for infrastructure, then it's okay to borrow money in advance because you'll pay it back, you know, because it's infrastructure. It's like when you buy a house. Most people have to borrow to get into a house.
Yeah, true.
You know, it's permanent, whereas you borrow money because it's just because you have to often to buy something that you just need to eat or need something. The economics and that are different, but big stuff for the country. It's like the ferries. It's just well, okay, this is a cost, but over 50 years, the cost works out at this. Bang, you know? But no, we don't want to go there.
Yeah, then that brings us, because you raised the point about homelessness earlier on, and then we talked about infrastructure. We had this so-called free trade agreement with India.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, because I think that also is important when we come to infrastructure. If we're going to bring all these rich migrants into the country out of India, what's going to happen to the local population?
Mm. It's going to impact on voting patterns too.
Yeah, well, that's what.
Oh, of course. Culture.
I'm being rude here, but I suspect that National are shoring up their vote for the next election.
Yeah, change the demographics.
Yeah.
Oh, I think you're right, and I hope that we have a debate. It doesn't mean it's sensible or not, but there needs to be a debate about it. And I have to give at least New Zealand First, which I'm not a, you know, don't usually follow them, but at least they said they're going to vote against it in its present form. And I think New Zealand needs to have that conversation between, okay, economy, but what does it mean for us? And like India's really excited about it. If you look at the international newspapers, et cetera, and the ones from India and all that, they're loving it because to them, the big thing about it is called mobility, population mobility.
The ones you can afford it will be coming over here.
Well, and not even the ones. Once is it a form of, we talked about colonisation earlier before we came on here. Is it a form of colonisation?
Yeah.
If in sufficient numbers.
Well, there's already 340,000 people of ethnic Indians in New Zealand, which is a lot. And they don't necessarily all come from India because some of them could come from Fiji or South Africa, etc. And that's not the issue in itself. And I want to emphasise, it's not the fault of the individual that comes here. For them, it's an opportunity and things like that. But the bigger picture is, are we doing all this just so the what I call the ownership class, which tend to be Nats, etc., are they just doing it because then they can sell their piece of land on the edge of a town or a city or some of their rentals, etc.? They're going to make money out of this. If we increase our population, what does it mean? And, okay, people, and we're always given the argument, more people, it drives the economy. If you look at England, around the world.
It drives the economy for a select few.
Well, it
also pushes the ones who are disadvantaged out of the cities.
Yeah.
Well, if you still have 30% of poor, whether you have 10 million here or 5 million here, you still have 30% of poor.
Yeah, but the numbers go up.
Well, the physical numbers go up.
There'll be more.
So it's something that I just wrote a few notes on it. And so to the Indian side of it, what's really what they're excited about is that population mobility. So that means, and of course they've got the same effects. They're known for their technology and then technical skills, etc. But they still have, technology is moving so fast, there's a lot of people who haven't got jobs.
Yeah.
The unemployment rate in India at present, that's registered, is just under 5%.
Yeah.
5% of India's population is 75 million.
Yeah.
1% of India, and that's not all because that's unemployed, etc. Some people won't, kids wouldn't be in that, so it'd be less. But got to remember, 1% of actual India's total population is 5 million people, 15 million people. It's 1.5 billion people.
Yeah.
They could very easy, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but we should have the conversation, they could very easy outpopulate the indigenous population here.
Yeah,
and I'm not talking about Māori, I'm talking about people all year.
Comment about the infrastructure keeping up with the increased population.
Yeah, and
schools, hospitals, you name it.
Yeah, so you've and people say, oh, well, it's, you know, then our government says, well, you know, they can only have 5,000 professionals here at any one time, and it's up to three years, etc. They've sort of said that, but you look at I'm talking about our own English history here and our European history coming to New Zealand. How many of us went back? How many of our ancestors went back?
Mm.
Even if, in those not
days,
many.
Not in those days, they didn't.
So you can't tell me that people coming here, if they've got skills, in the end they will qualify to stay. Because I say they will bring skills and they will bring tune, etc. So, but what does it mean for our culture, our politics, our religion, our sexism, you know, all that? Because people do. Populations, the ethnicities and religions, they bring in their own culture.
Yep.
It's not their fault, that's just how it is. This is what we do over there. We did our English ancestors did that. And initially, and I've talked about this before, initially the first contact with Māori, etc., we made an attempt to deal with them and talk with them, and of course the men didn't have women, so there was quite a bit of intermarriage, etc. But after a while, the trickle of Europeans coming here became a flood.
Yep.
And we no longer needed to talk to Honey and Mary about doing some work for them in the house. We used our own labour. We used the old European labour. So Māori got more and more sidelined very quickly.
Yep.
Now, so I'm not saying that's going to happen.
So the same thing could happen.
Yeah, and we need to have that discussion about okay, if we're going to increase the population, and already without this free trade agreement, they've already said that the Indian population, ethnic Indian population, they become New Zealand citizens. Mm-hmm. But by 2048, the estimated population will be 900,000.
Yeah, so it's skewing it, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Population increase is huge.
Yeah.
And, okay, they're young. And, of course, India has the prime thing. They have their demographics of youth. Their average age is very low, so that you bring in young people who can pay tax, etc., and work and that. So that's the attraction. Mm. And India has lots of young people. But do we talk about, okay, what's going to be the effects of that?
Yep.
So. So part of this deal is dairy is excluded, except sheep meat, and then meat. Except sheep meat, they can bring it in, aluminium, and there's some other stuff, bits and pieces. And New Zealand's committed to investing US $20 billion in India over 15 years. That's the third of our super fund.
Yeah. You said a minute ago, something about a five-year period, and come over for 5 years or something?
3 years. The professionals, they get a three-year work
permit. Visitors work
permit. Yeah. But what I'm saying is once they're here...
But how is that going to be policed? If it's going to be enforced, send them back.
Yeah, how does that work?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, and they have a child here.
So that could just how be a that fop. Work? That could just be a fop to the rest of the... they'll only be allowed...
Oh, I think it is.
They'll be allowed to only stay for 3 years and then they'll have to go back just to calm any... misgivings by other members of the
government. Yeah, I think it is. They come over here and they've got a profession. That means they'll have some money, so they buy a house reasonably quickly, etc. They have children, etc. Are they going to want to go back to where they're from?
No. Would I?
You know, if life's better, you're not going to go back to life's worse, hence migration.
Yeah.
And I say our European ancestors, Māori did it. Initially, they came from the islands because it was too cramped, etc. They were looking for more opportunity, more new land, you know? So that's a human thing. So it's
also
not
a numbers game too, isn't it? Sheer numbers.
It's the result of what happens with the numbers, the changing numbers, etc. So it's something that we should have a big discussion about. And I think we will because it's got to be ratified by Parliament, thankfully. We haven't got the Trump-type thing where Luxon could decide on his own.
It hasn't been signed into law, has it?
And New Zealand First has already said, hang on, no, right to disagree. So they will need some support from either the Greens or from
Labour. And Labour murmured that they would support it.
Did they?
Because, as I say, there is exports and everything else. There is big stuff. But there is a cost. That's what I'm getting at. I think
there's a lot of cost in it.
So is the attention focused on that, or is they just looking at the potential or economic?
Well, if you look at the papers, the potential is about the money side.
It's dollar signs in the eyes.
They're not looking at the aftermath.
And I go back. The people that are going looking at the dollar sign, a lot of them are the privileged, and they will benefit financially out of it all.
So they'll be pushing for it.
Yeah,
they're not looking at the social side of it.
No, and the cultural side of it,
and the infrastructure side of it.
And Māori would well know, because it's like that. You go back to the treaty. It's all very well saying, "I've got a free trade agreement." Māori had a treaty, and initially it sounded great. They'd be treated as equals. But we know how that worked out.
Look what's going on. They're trying to undermine that.
Yeah, well, and I say, look how it worked out. Māori lost most of their land and everything else. And sure, the chiefs were the last ones to lose their land. But, after a while, it impoverished a lot of Māori. But not, early 20th century, 1910, life wasn't any fun for most Māori.
If what you're talking about comes to fruition, then lots of people, even more, are going to be disenfranchised.
Yeah. Working, well, and we were Māori.
Māori and working poor Europeans will be.
And Polynesians, etc. And the odd exception.
Yeah.
But they will still be at the bottom.
Pushed down even further.
They won't say, oh, well, the Indians are coming and they'll work from the bottom up. It won't work like that. It won't be like that. They will still be at the bottom, but pushed further down.
Yeah.
And the danger is if you bring in a population, and I don't know the answer to this. But if that population doesn't believe in a benefit system or doesn't believe in a social welfare or look after yourself, that gradually flows into politics and to political parties, etc., what you mentioned before.
Because all those political parties will be competing for that same pool of people and blah, blah, blah.
Nah, and if you bring in – and the Indian culture is very family networks orientated. They have and it's not just coming from me. I got it off. I asked Google about Indians' reputation about tax, and they said Indians' reputation for not liking paying tax, and that comes from Google. So they have it, and there's several reasons. The reasons are they believe they don't get anything for their taxes, poor social services and everything else. But then, of course, there's only 5.5% of Indians pay income tax at present. It's a shockingly low rate because most of them don't earn enough.
That was reflected out of Pakistan, wasn't it, with their power, with their poor power grid. And they talk about
If you go to Scandinavian countries and even ours, there's people who want to avoid it, but they don't have what I call it seems they don't have the ethos about. Yep, should pay tax so we have a hospital. It doesn't seem to be.
I'm surprised that it works in India if only 5% of the population pay tax.
Well, they have other sorts of taxes and bits and pieces.
Is it income tax?
Yeah, this is income tax. Right. And they have the hot top rate and all that. But there's a lot of there's a lot of corruption and inefficiencies. And I say, then because there's not a big income of taxation, then they have poor social services.
Yeah.
So it chases it's a dog chasing its tail. And they have a complex system and they have a tax evasion culture. These all come off Google, this is not me. And that tax evasion culture, some of it's legal and some of it's illegal, of course. But they also have which I thought was really interesting, a reliance on family networks over the state. And this would be music to the ACT Party's ears.
Look after yourself.
Look after yourself. And so family networks tend to do the support.
Which only works if you've got a functional family.
Network. So the basic thing, the belief is that taxes don't yield any personal benefit or any public good. Yeah. And so what if that's a perception and that's perception, will a population come in here and go, actually, we need to pay tax because that's why I can get into the hospital? Hopefully that will happen.
Well, they should be
made that connection, but
if we're going to have masses of migration, we still should do it now. Forget that whether you're an Indian or Englishman or whatever.
Yeah.
Those are the sort of things when you apply to come to New Zealand, there almost needs to be sat down and go, well, this is how it works. You have a job, you pay tax, so we have a hospital.
If you don't like that, go.
Yeah, leave. We don't emphasise that enough. No. I'm sure. So
it's all about making money.
So
that's what this deal is about.
Yeah. And the other interest. So, and that's what I go back to. 1% of India's population is 15 million.
Yep.
What's our population now?
5.5 million,
sorry.
Yeah. And to me, it's not necessarily wrong, but it will mean a huge culture change.
Yeah, if you're talking those numbers.
Mm. Well, it's, I say, they wouldn't.
Cultural and politically.
Yeah.
This whole concept, we talk about social problems, but we will talk about, what about resentment? Xenophobia.
Oh,
those sorts of things.
It's a veritable can of worms.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and don't forget, you've got to remember, I'm sure to places, the population of India, actually, even the ones that have come, realise New Zealand is so empty. And if you look at our size compared to the UK and Italy, we've got 5.3 million people.
Yeah.
The UK's got
65 million.
Italy's similar.
Yeah.
And similar land masses. So when you go, oh, it's an empty land, people say, well, it's an empty land. Of course they can handle the people. And that's a debate to be had. Should we go to 50 million people? Why don't we have that cross debate? And hopefully it becomes an election issue. Because this, when they have to ratify it, we'll be getting close to the election.
Yeah. Hopefully it is an election issue.
Well, I say, I can't decide, because there's pluses to it. We sell more stuff and they bring skills in and we're short.
That's only part of the equation, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. There's other parts. There was this thing about the, what are you talking about, investment.
Mm.
If we don't do our part of the bargain, what happens then? We could lose lots of money.
Or they'll go, well, you haven't done it, so we want more people coming.
Yeah.
You know, once the deal's in, look, and I'll go back to the Treaty of Waitangi. Starts off good intention, and then what happens?
Yeah.
You know?
Breaches.
Breaches, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
They move the goalposts.
Yeah. So this is something that needs to be, and unfortunately, the papers are just full of the money side of it. I think there needs to be far more talk about
social and.
Say
infrastructure and all those things.
Politics, religion,
culture,
sexism.
Yeah,
is very big over there. I'm going to say that male. What do you call male dominated stuff?
Patriotic.
All that sort of thing. How will our female society that's here feel about that? It does have an effect.
And it could also have impact on those same communities coming over, because we've got the same problem in the UK where you have Indian or Pakistani. Go to the UK, their children are westernised and don't necessarily want to follow the traditional social mores of their
norms,
parents.
Yeah, norms, yeah.
That's caused enormous problems with the so-called honour killings and all sorts of things. So, yes, it's a veritable can of worms.
Yeah, it almost sounds like you don't bring your crap here, sort of thing.
Well, I personally think...
Which is hard, because that's all nigh impossible, isn't it?
Yeah.
We should have some sort of moratorium on our population. Like, the people should be asked, do we just keep going at our population?
Well, the way these guys act, well, not in both sides, they don't really give a damn what the population thinks. They're just pushing the agenda.
No, and they're not affected because they profit by it.
They'll still live in their nice little areas.
Yeah, and they'll still be at Waiheke Island on the beachfront.
Yes, all that, but it won't impact on them.
Yeah. What it does affect is Mehdi and Benny that are in a house somewhere.
Being pushed out.
And they're pushed out of it because the landlord's flicked it onto an... And it sounds derogatory. I don't mean it derogatory. From a family that's coming from overseas.
Mm.
And it's not that family's fault. They're just taking an opportunity.
Yeah. But the impact, for good or ill, is enormous.
Yeah.
And I think this is a conversation that came up because my younger brother came down to see us on Sunday.
Yeah.
Talking about the white flight out of certain areas of Auckland.
Yeah.
This is all part of the same argument.
Well, I'll go into we talked about the election fraud in Papatoetoe, and it's been overruled, and that's known as Little India. Their fault. People congregate together. That's sort of how it happens. When you're a migrant,
mm-hmm.
you tend to go where someone knows your language or your culture rather than go in amongst a whole lot of other people. That's human nature, and that happens around the world, of course.
Mm, yeah.
But, yeah, it's...
It's one for the sociologists to try and work out.
Well, and I think it's we as a population that debate should be encouraged and not just...
It's like other debates that should be encouraged. Like,
and let's face it.
Genuine debates where you look at everything, not just from the monetary point of view, but the social point of view.
And
will that mean we pay, instead of paying $9 for a pound of butter, 500 gram butter, will that mean we pay 15? Because we said, you know, let's face it, we've only got so much land. And we're using the fast tracking to try and squinch some more out of areas that we shouldn't, but in my opinion. But
well, so that's another thing, pressure on surrounding areas for building houses.
Houses or more production for food. Because
motorways and all that stuff.
You can't blame, you can understand the cocky going, I can get $15 for my product instead of 10 because we now got another huge market. I reckon dairy is excluded at this stage, but it won't stay that way. These deals have a tendency to just have a life of their own. Because there's money in it, you know.
So
the pressure on land, the pressure on populations, pressure on health,
the ability
services,
to grow food.
That's it too. We had this discussion also at home, but this is also about Japan. Japan's probably about the same size, bigger than us.
Yeah.
But how much usable land have they actually got? They've got bugger all.
No, but they're very efficient.
Only if nothing goes wrong, you don't have floods or fires.
Because
that's another impact on the ability to grow food is if you're a flood-prone area or fire.
So if we build on land that's where we grow in fruit, vegetables, whatever, and raise stock, what happens if that gets, the population grows, that sort of land gets reduced, what happens then?
Well, and go back to what happened to Māori in the end.
Yeah.
It started off, they just could wander and they were hunter-gatherers and a few crops. But okay. Gradually, the European farmer said, "Oh no, I don't want you going over here to the river. I don't want you going on that hill to pick."
Business.
Whereas once it was, you can go there and help yourself. All that gradually that changes things. New cultures, it's not their fault, will bring their own culture with them.
Is that
we need to have the debate, good or bad? How does it work?
Well, it becomes really complicated because at one time we wanted to be more self-sufficient. That was one of the things that came out during COVID, that because of the international interconnectivity of the system broke down. If we reduced our ability to grow our own food, then we're relying on importing stuff.
That's a problem.
More and more, which means the price goes up.
Yes.
And if you have impacts by floods or famine or fire, that all impacts...
Well, it's just and population. If we're going to have a bigger population and our land area doesn't keep up for it, which it can't, it's a finite
result.
What will the food be? And if we're still exporting because we get a huge price, it's the bottom line is, it brings price increases.
And unfortunately, the quality of food goes down. The mass-produced food is. There's lots of countries in the South Pacific and South Atlantic. They're going back to growing their own stuff because the imported stuff that we make is detrimental to their health.
Quality of food goes down for the poor.
Not for the rich.
Not for the wealthy. Because they can still buy range-free
eggs. They can afford to buy cheap, nasty...
Whatever's the cheapest on the shelf.
And then you wonder why you've got an explosion of diabetes, obesity...
It goes on and on.
It's a
complicated subject. And whether our politicians will take the time out to nut this out properly, I don't have much hope. They'll do what you say. They'll focus on the monetary aspect of...
Could only be short-term, because
it's fickle.
Well, and also...
Economic slumps, economic booms.
Get a new population come in. Initially, we might have traded with Māori. In the end, we didn't need to. They're going to allow 15 bank branches... Indian bank branches from India, Indian businesses. So you can't blame someone from that culture coming in and using a bank
they're familiar with.
They can come in and they can talk in their language, etc.
Which is understandable.
Yeah, which is what our European ancestors did.
But what does that have an impact on the economy, in terms of money circulating, going out of the country, coming back in, whatever,
How does the mixing happen? How does the assimilation happen? Or has it just become a replacement.
It becomes a non-simulation because they end up reinforcing their own culture and not their own... Which is understandable, but doesn't lend to assimilation.
Well, we've seen in rich
enclaves. Europe or UK, you end up with enclaves of particular ethnicities that don't or won't assimilate
with the main population.
Well, and that's the dangerous. Mm. But rich and poor. When we had social housing in big numbers, we had peppercorn housing.
Mm-hmm.
So there were
a mixture.
There was a mixture of rich and poor, white and brown, and etc. Yeah,
which breaks down that class thing.
That was the idea behind it.
But now we've reversed all that. It's
I'm not sure, but I do think we definitely need to have a big debate on it. Because it's just the same population. 1% of India's population is
that's the issue. Yeah, it
is 15 million
people.
It needs
to be genuine comment, not politicised by different parties pushing a particular agenda.
We have to try and keep the prejudice out of it, but we also have to discuss that this is a different culture.
Yeah,
and in India itself, it has different cultures.
Yeah, I think we mentioned the Iwi enclave. Mm. I think that's actually starting to beginning here already.
Mm. Well, it's sort of a natural thing.
Yeah, that's
but is it good or bad? Yeah. And what's the repotentials?
It's bad.
It's got potential for either.
Yeah, it's got potential of becoming.
It depends on those people in that enclave, and depends on those people outside the enclave as to how they get on with each other, or do they want to get on with each other?
And to me, it's a bit like I'm still go back to Māori Europeans. When a trickle of Europeans came in, there was quite an assimilation. They needed Māori, they needed Māori food, etc.
It was to their advantage to be nice.
But if you get a flood...
Then it changes the rules.
Then you suddenly don't need those local people.
No, you no longer ask.
You can go in up to the shop, don't have to use a different language or different culture.
You go from asking.
Go to the hospital, you don't have to go to the bank.
You go from asking to taking.
Yeah.
Well, that's the danger. Not necessarily
that's what
will happen.
But most empires,
history,
so it starts off.
What does history tell us?
Yes. Yeah. They start off being nice, and when they don't get their way, right, we're taking that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. So, I think it's a.
It needs to be discussed seriously, not politicised.
Yeah.
And no naffy little sound bites.
Yeah, not.
It's got to be a genuine discussion that this is the future. How are we going to respond?
And so, education is really important.
I don't think these guys will. Put the resources behind an education
program. Well, they'll have dollar signs thinking about.
Yeah, they've got a vested interest.
What they're going to do. Yeah.
They've already sold in the idea. The rest of it's just spinning. It's just PR.
And I say they've got dollar signs. How much they're going to get for their bit of land on the edge of Auckland or Hamilton?
They'll lie through a team and say, "Yes, you'll benefit from this influx of immigrants." But the reality would be, they don't care for nothing.
But see, then to put it into perspective, If they bring in more people, then why aren't we having the vision? And this is where I think you want more people, bring in the infrastructure, high speed rail, Auckland, Tauranga, Hamilton to start.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If you're gonna do that sort of thing,
they're trying to do it.
Where's the extra hospitals going to be? Where's the extra
schools? Where's the extra this? Where's the extra that?
They're just thinking about making money.
Yeah, it's just dollar signs. Swell my bank account stuff.
And every now and again, when the system starts to collapse, and like the nurses, they'll start wringing their hands and gnashing their teeth. Yes, we've got to do something. It's terrible, and they won't change a damn thing. They'll just carry on pushing this agenda. That's the danger.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, if migration is measured and comes as paced, then assimilation can happen. The kids get used to how we are and all this.
You have the opportunity. It doesn't necessarily follow.
No, but at least it's there.
You've got the potential for assimilation. It provided both communities take the time to meet halfway.
Yeah, that was the idea.
The idea, but in practice, it doesn't seem to work like that.
Seems to get to
the UK is terrible for that. There's salt areas where, as a European, I wouldn't go into.
Well, and
not because because their attitude towards me, in Europe. No.
Well, it's the culture.
Yeah. But it's
happening here.
Yeah.
Apparently.
You're seen as a threat.
Yeah. So
you haven't done anything. You just walked in, mind your own business. But.
And that's the discussion that needs to be had. How's it going to affect society? And should we just that's all right. There's money, but I say if Honey can't only dreams about a pavlova and a 500 gram of butter now, if we get more for it and his situation hasn't changed,
it's pretty deteriorated.
Well, there's the chance of it. population come in and go, when they look at who they're going to vote for, go, well, you just look after yourself and you come from that sort of culture, then that doesn't bode well for social welfare and societal
race relations
and race all that sort of thing can come in.
Oh, yeah, it could be a dog's breakfast.
As I say, you have seen in... and it's not just India by any means, but
any group of India.
Where someone lives in a big high tower and they've got all their slum houses that they rent out to the the poor below.
Yeah, there's these other things that concern me about
pollution,
the steel. One of them is the slave labour type stuff that comes here.
Indentured,
it happens in a lot of cultures. They just bring over, hold the passport, and they use their own.
That should be a no-no here.
Should be, but
it should be a no-no. But
I think the conversation needs
conversation.
Well, and it needs to be. Hopefully, some of the parties and the Labour Party, especially,
it was almost, dare I say, a bipartisan approach. Yeah,
but even some Nats I've talked to have gone. I said, do you realise it'll mean a change in our society? Oh yeah, well I guess you know. But they work hard, which that's a fair comment. A lot of Indians have got a reputation
for being good workers. No one faults them for that.
No.
It's the attitudes and the baggage they bring with them.
That's the issue I've got.
Yeah, how do they see women, you know?
Yeah, that's one of them.
That's a big one. Yeah.
How do they see other groups?
Yeah. How do they
see... attitude towards Māori or Europeans or whatever.
Muslims. How do they see taxation?
Yeah, taxation.
What's the right thing?
It's a veritable can of worms. Yeah. Once you start digging into this, there's all sorts of things start coming up.
And they're not a block, because they'll be in Indian society, just like our society. There'll be ones that have a good social heart and others that look after yourself. But it still needs to be a discussion. Māori have had that discussion with the Treaty of Waitara, and they still do it about the ills of the treaty and the benefits, and they've had that all the way through. But we just stopped talking about it. You know, Europeans don't usually talk about the treaty.
Yeah,
it's sort of just got pushed aside.
It doesn't have the same impact.
No. Well, Māori have, they've said, well,
we took you at your word. You're supposed to be delivering certain things.
But you haven't.
I do. It'll be interesting. But I definitely hope it becomes, and hope's the right word, I hope it becomes a big political issue that we talk about.
Yeah.
And I say, not just the dollar, how much,
and just
dollars and cents.
Not just politicising it.
And I hope they go down and ask the people in Mortara, and I hope they ask the people in poor areas and
well, they ought areas, to do that,
because they're the ones who will be affected first.
But will these political parties go that length and go and...
No, because unfortunately they know they don't vote in enough numbers.
So it's already started off that this idea of comprehensive discussion has already been curtailed.
Well, it's only going to be between the wealthy and the middle class.
So it's already been curtailed. Uh-huh. It's already been compromised.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should all have that discussion. We'd like to have it today.
Anyway, that's... I've got harped on about it a bit. But,
that's a good one.
I can't decide, but I do think we need to...
Really
think it through.
Seriously, because there's officials on it,
And unfortunately, given the track record of our politicians, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, and of course...
They won't put in the work.
We do need migration because our own population isn't replacing itself.
We're aging,
and we don't have lots of children anymore. So
we rely on immigrants to man our nursing homes.
So does Italy, so does Germany, so does...
Spain just recently, I think late last year, or this year, sorry, they had something like 900,000 undocumented refugees. They've changed it so they've been given citizenship so they can get work in Spain, because Spain realised they need those immigrants
to pick
run
the cucumbers.
Pick up the cucumbers, whatever.
Well, look at America, Trump. They're all going about migrants and all that. But who does all the labour? Who does all the housemates and
migrants?
And the odd housekeeper gets lucky with Arnold Schwarzenegger, but the rest are just workers. But they do so much for the
taxes. Committee.
They pick the fruit and do all this.
So they're contributing to the greater good.
Probably pay more taxes than Trump.
Yeah.
So it's a huge issue.
Very complex.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other part of it, we're not replacing ourselves, because we're allowing our young people to go to Australia.
as well.
That's also society, we have moved on.
Yeah, we have moved on, I know that.
The old days of Dad went to work and Mum stayed at home and brought up the kids and bottled fruit and
well, that's
and
gone. All that's right. We know that's
gone.
Yeah, we know that's gone.
Well, see, in China, they were talking about this week, they're having a demographic replacement problem.
Of course they are, yeah.
Because kids can't afford to have kids.
Yeah.
Or get married.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
And so the government's now introduced monetary incentives for...
And many countries have.
To try and...
Norway and replace themselves. Sweden. They're trying to get the young to have children.
Malta has the lowest fertility and replacement in the European Union.
Okay.
They were talking about it beginning of this week.
Uh-huh. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, you're right.
And
yeah.
Again, they take on immigrants to man the hospitals and the garages and whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're not replacing themselves.
Yeah.
It's a very complex problem.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. But we don't want to go with it with just dollar signs in our eyes.
Or just political. It'd be nice if you could have a bipartisan. Okay. I know I'm being naive, but
you
need a bipartisan approach to this. It's an enormous issue.
We almost need to be like the Chinese, actually have a plan. How's it going to work?
Yes. Yeah, and given the track record of ours, it ain't gonna happen.
They've got no merit, so they'll just rush it through.
Yeah.
Well, they'll rubber
stamp
it. It needs to be discussed with the election coming up later on this year or next year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the price of free trade.
Yes, it comes at a cost. There's nothing for free.
No.
Yeah, I just got that. You got that fear about that we could look like England in a few years' time.
If that's what the population want, that's fair enough. But the population should be asked.
But I don't want the nasty side of life.
That's the danger of it.
The resentment and the xenophobic behaviour. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the racism starts.
And when
starts.
Economic difficulties arise, then certain groups get scapegoated.
Yeah.
All the rest of it.
That's why I don't want
to. Well, and let's face it. Trump and people like that exploit it very well. They say, well, the reason why you're poor, Mr. American, is because that migrant's taking your job. You know, it's very easy to sell people who are poor,
never mind
uneducated, that it's
Trump,
their fault.
But people like Trump had employed that immigrant.
Oh, exploited it to help.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So
changing tact, what have we got there?
Well, it's a bit more to put. I know this was in Monday's paper. The nursing crisis boiling over, the lack of staff means Waikato District Nursing Service is set to be suspended in part of the region. The health system has been accused of breaking the law amid skyrocketing demand for community-based nurses. In Waikato, this comes as the supply of district nurses lags behind referral increase of more than 100%, leading to staff burnout and an unprecedented service failure. And it's a big article, right? But, referrals have jumped nearly 50% in the last 5 years, with a monthly average now at 330. This is out in the community, compared to 225 in 2020. Nursing staff numbers have increased by an almost imperceptible margin, from 17.35 equal to full time employment, it went up to 17.41. So the system is buckling. And in the community, and so some areas will be impacted more than city urban areas. I think we'd be marginally better off.
It comes back to what we've been talking about.
It's all interconnected.
Mm. Yeah, if we don't shore up our infrastructure, and that means people infrastructure, the whole thing's going to fall flat on its
own. Well, aging population too. Yeah. We still haven't reached the peak of our aging population.
No, we haven't, no.
Mm.
No,
we're supposed to peak, was it middle of this century, isn't it? We're supposed to peak.
Yeah, that's because it's all to do with the baby boom.
We're boomers.
Us baby boomers, yeah.
Turning 65 plus.
Yeah. So, that does calm down, but I think it's still got 5 or 10 years to go.
And the immigrant thing, I mean, I've got a guy who works through Age Concern. I've got one guy I see once a week. And if it wasn't for the Indians and the Filipinas and the Pakistanis working, the system wouldn't work. It just crumbled. It would just collapse.
Well, my mum's care home, they're mainly different ethnicities there. A few Europeans, but they're mainly, from India, from Philippines, and they're wonderful.
If it wasn't for them, the system would just crumble. It's just
Filipinos are a little bit more user-friendly than...
They've got a culture from there. They've got a different attitude towards the elderly than Europeans. It's part of their culture to be respectful when an elderly member of your family deteriorates, and often they step up.
Well, we haven't.
Yeah, that's just time has sped us by. Wow. Yeah, it's here. But was to say happy. It was a happy new year because the next show you'll hear will be in 2026.
See you next year.
Yeah, see you next year. You'll catch us on Free FM and our podcasts.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.